Welcome to Soils at Work, the biology of soil health, an initiative of the Compost Council of Canada, Henner Waste, Overton Environmental, EnviroClean, Waste Connections, The Forks, Cities of Brandon, Portage La Prairie, Steinbach, and Winnipeg, and the members of the Compost Quality Alliance, supported with funding through Manitoba Conservation and Climate, and Growing Forward To, a federal-provincial territorial initiative. The Compost Council of Canada and our compost facilities are excited to offer this learning through workshops as well as webinars and online education, providing classrooms at your own convenience and at your own pace, such as this audio learning program. This is Chapter 7 of our 8-chapter series. So let's begin. Chapter 7, Soil Health Principles. What is the basis for good practical soil health principles? To answer this question, we need to go back to the main points made in Chapter 6, which were as follows. The soil is alive. The sources of that life are the organisms in the soil ecosystem, also known as the soil food web. All living organisms have certain basic needs. For life in the soil, those needs are energy, stable habitat, and diversity. When these needs are met, the life in the soil organizes complex, productive communities that are enormously beneficial to both the underground and above-ground communities. The soil health principles that follow in this chapter all derive from those basic needs and from the overall intent of protecting and enhancing the life in soils. They also take into account the reality of ecological succession and its ongoing impact on soils and crops. Principle 1. Keep the soil covered. The two most practical and common ways for farmers to keep the soil covered are with crop residues and/or with cover crops. The basic benefit of covered soil is protection of the soil food web habitat. Both residues and living plant material protect the soil from temperature extremes, reduce the impacts of heavy rains and wind, and conserve moisture. All of these things directly benefit the members of the soil community. Covered soil is also more comparable with conditions found in ecosystems that are more advanced in ecological succession, as opposed to the more disturbed habitats of early succession, where soil is often bare and conditions are more extreme. The more hospitable conditions under covered soil allow more advanced and productive soil ecosystems to form and sustain themselves. Principle 2. Keep live roots in the ground. To put it plainly as possible, allowing soil to lie bare of living plant life starves the organisms of the soil food web. As discussed in Chapter 6, living soils require a consistent source of energy. Some of that energy comes from plant residues, but much of the energy in living ecosystems comes from plant root exudates, which of course requires that there be plants growing in the soil. Starving the food web organisms has some very important negative consequences. Deprived of food, the microbes will either die or become dormant, depriving the communities, above and below, of their valuable services. But that, unfortunately, is not the whole story. Before the microbes go dormant or die, they will try to find energy in other places, such as the carbon reserves in your soil. Unfortunately, this often includes the glues that hold soil aggregates together. Of course, none of this is positive for your soil structure, and starving your microbes on a consistent basis is a good way to increase the chances that your soil will be structureless and compacted. It gets even worse than this. Mycorrhizal fungi are, as we discussed in chapters 2 to 4, fundamental to soil structure, natural fertility, disease suppression, and a number of other important soil functions. They are also what is called obligate symbiotes. What this means is that they don't have a choice with respect to their symbiotic relationship with plant roots. They need roots as hosts, or they die. Accordingly, a bare field for months on end will mean low mycorrhizal numbers in your fields, with all that entails. Mycorrhizal spores will survive, of course, but instead of starting the new growing season with a full mycorrhizal network in place, you will be counting on those spores to repopulate the field, a very energy-intensive process from the fungal perspective. This is not efficient, and over time, a field can become a mycorrhizal desert to the detriment of the soil ecosystem, plant yield and health, and the farmer's bottom line. Keeping live roots in the ground doesn't just mean three seasons of the year. It means putting in fall cover crops and leaving them over the winter. The roots will continue to contribute exudates as long as the plant survives. Even after death, these roots will be useful as they will release their nutrients in the spring, just as the soil food web wakes up, hungry, and ready to explode in numbers and activity. Principle 3, add organic amendments. Organic inputs have traditionally been seen as having a major disadvantage when compared to synthetic fertilizer, that is, their relatively low nutrient levels. However, viewed through a soil health lens, these materials can be seen as a necessary complement to chemical fertilization. This is because organic inputs can support the soil food web in ways that synthetic inputs cannot. Of course, these benefits often don't carry the immediate economic value that nutrients do. But as we have heard in previous chapters, this may be a short-sighted assessment. Organic inputs come in a number of different forms. These include, but are not limited to, the following: animal manures, processed human waste known as biosolids, paper mill sludge, digestate from anaerobic digesters, and compost made from a variety of inputs, including all the other sources just mentioned. Each of these materials has slightly different characteristics when applied to soil. In essence, they are all organic residuals, but they come from different sources and are in different stages of decomposition. Not enough research has yet been done on the differences between them in terms of benefits to the soil food web. However, there are a few things that we can say with some certainty. From an environmental perspective, material that has been well and properly composted carries the least risk. This is because the material has been stabilized to a greater degree than is the case for manure, biosolids, sludges, and digestates. This higher degree of stabilization means that more of the nutrients are tied up in organic forms and are therefore less likely to run off into ground or surface water, creating pollution. In addition, the composting process, when done properly, greatly reduces and usually eliminates the problems associated with weed seeds and pathogens. Of course, this greater stabilization also means that nutrients in compost tend to be less available to plants in the short term. As a result, many farmers prefer the less stabilized forms, since more of the nutrients are readily available to plants as soon as the material is land applied. However, this trade-off, nutrient availability versus environmental risk, may not be necessary if the full soil health picture is taken into account. As we have heard in earlier chapters, it appears to be at least possible, if not likely, that a high-functioning soil food web can release these tied-up nutrients for plants. Moreover, they can do so in the right place, the rhizosphere, and at the right time, when the plant needs them. This natural system has the potential to both maximize plant uptake and yield, while at the same time minimizing nutrient loss and pollution. Unfortunately, the full range of research required to test and assess the pragmatic aspects of this potential has not yet been conducted. Without this research, the tools required to make a better economic analysis of the value of the various organic inputs are not yet available for farmers to use. Hopefully, the increased interest in soil health worldwide will result in the commission of the scientific work needed to develop such tools. In addition, the need to mitigate and adapt to climate change may yet make additional revenues available to farmers who use these materials in the form of carbon offsets or credits. However, even now, from a soil health perspective, it's hard to argue against the obvious benefits associated with the application of organic amendments, and particularly composted ones, to farm fields. Principle 4, maximize diversity. Farmers can maximize diversity in any number of ways, including, but not limited to, using more complex crop rotations, using multi-species cover crop mixes, applying a variety of different organic inputs, such as manures, composts, digestates, etc., creating above-ground areas of pollinator habitat, and using a number of different seed varieties. All of these tools help to ensure that the soil food web experiences a variety of inputs. For instance, using a mix of cover crops can provide a range of different plant root exudates as different plants secrete different organic substances. It can also ensure that these exudates occur at different depths as the various cover crops should have different root forms and lengths. crop rotations provide similar benefits. In addition, both rotations and covers can be used to simulate some degree of ecological succession, allowing the soil ecosystem to further develop its complexity, resilience, and productivity. The above-ground diversity of plants also helps to ensure a corresponding above-ground diversity of animal life, particularly beneficial insects. Pests are in the minority within the insect world. The vast majority of insects are either beneficial to farmers or neutral. It makes sense, then, that larger numbers of diverse species will reduce the chance that a pest will take over. Remember that monocultures and other low-diversity farm fields are, from an ecological perspective, empty niches. They are just begging to be filled by the most opportunistic creatures of the insect world, which just happen to be the pests. When diversity rules, resilience is not far behind. When we look at how much redundancy exists in terms of functions in a good soil, it can be amazing. For instance, there may be hundreds or even thousands of species that perform the same task, such as secreting glues that bind mineral particles to make microaggregates, when it would seem that simply a high number of one or two varieties would suffice. However, when environmental conditions change, as they do all the time, it's good to have another set of organisms ready to take over when the original group can no longer manage the task. If the soil dries out, for instance, there's no problem if you have a set of drought-resistant microbes ready to step in and take over. The temperature climbs and your N fixers can't take the heat and go dormant? Again, no problem if the soil contains another set, perhaps sleeping up until now, who really like the heat and can't wait to swing into action. Promoting diversity in all its forms builds and then supports resilient soil ecosystems. Resilience is important in any environment, but even more so when the climate is changing, becoming less consistent and predictable, and much more prone to extreme events. Principle 5, minimize soil disturbance. This principle refers primarily to the practice of tillage. Once we begin to see the soil ecosystem as an intricately structured community, the destructiveness of tillage becomes very apparent. Imagine how difficult life would be for you if every year somebody came around with a wrecking ball and destroyed your house. Most of your energy and money would be going into rebuilding each year. You would have little left for anything else. Tillage is like that in its effects on soil, but of course, it's a bit more than that too. Farmers till for a reason. It has a powerful short-term effect. Tillage releases nutrients by introducing a big burst of oxygen into the soil, which stimulates the decomposer microbes. As these microbes explode in number, the predator microbes also increase. This results in a flush of nutrients as the predator-prey action we described in Chapter 3 increases enormously in the rhizosphere. Farmers have known for thousands of years that tillage increases fertility, at least in the short term. The soil is also loosened by tillage, allowing for easier planting, and weeds are uprooted and destroyed. All of these short-term benefits, however, come at a huge cost to the community below ground, and that below ground impact eventually translates into greater costs to the farmer and to the environment. All of the beneficial soil functions that we discussed in earlier chapters take a serious hit when soil is tilled. The soil food web is diminished, not always in number, but certainly in diversity. Consequently, soil's functions are also diminished, resulting in the need for synthetic inputs that might not otherwise have been required. Eliminating tillage has a number of challenges, however, and discussing solutions to these technical issues is beyond the scope of this primer. Nevertheless, we can say here that any practice that minimizes disturbance of the soil is good for the health of the soil. Both science and practical experience tell us that when the soil community is protected from violent and/or frequent disturbance, beneficial soil functions of all kinds gradually increase. The short-term fertility benefits of tillage are replaced by long-term, sustainable levels of fertility that at least can match and can often exceed those of tillage. Of course, best results are obtained if all of the other soil health principles are followed as well. Reducing tillage all by itself may not protect, feed, and diversify the soil food web enough to compensate for the loss of tillage's short-term benefits. Finally, We should note that minimizing soil disturbance allows ecological succession to proceed below ground. As discussed in Chapter 6, below ground communities change with succession, just as above ground communities do. Tillage is a catastrophic event that knocks succession backwards, causing it to reset. This encourages weeds, which are by definition pioneer species, well adapted to disturbed habitats. Tillage also ravages networks of fungal hyphae, forcing these organisms to spend too much energy trying to rebuild. Regular soil disturbance frustrates the development of more established fungal communities, resulting in permanently bacterial-dominated fields. The long-term sustainable benefits of a thriving, well-balanced soil food web require a more balanced ratio of fungus to bacteria, something that soils simply cannot develop under a heavy tillage regime. Other beneficial practices. The principles just described provide a strong, comprehensive basis for developing a soil food web strategy. However, there are a few other practices that bear mention here as well. Two areas that stand out in this regard are nutrient management and pest control. Nutrient management. Nutrients of all kinds, organic or synthetic, are important and necessary. A farmer will not get a good crop without adequate nutrients. However, the form that the nutrients take and the way they are made available to the plant are also important factors. For instance, too much readily available nutrient, particularly phosphorus and nitrogen, suppress mycorrhizal fungi. This is not surprising, given the cost the plant has to pay to the fungi in return for the benefits they provide. This might not seem like a bad thing. Now that the plant is not feeding its micropartners, it can put more of its production into yield. That may be true in the short term, but in the soil, as everywhere else in the natural world, there is no such thing as a free lunch. Mycorrhizal fungi deliver a lot more to the plant than nutrients, including water, soil building services, and disease, weed, and pest suppression. That is a lot to give up for a free lunch. The goal of a soil health-inspired nutrient management plan should be to get the most out of natural fertility and as much as possible use synthetic fertility to enhance rather than replace the natural system. Of course, finding the right balance is easier said than done, and we still have a lot to learn in order to be able to do this optimally. However, in the short term, following the 4 R's program for nutrient use, right source, right rate, right time, right place, developed by the Fertilizer Institute, Fertilizer Canada, and International Plant Nutrient Institute, is a very, very good place to start. Pest control. As with nutrients, pesticides can be a double-edged sword. If not used carefully or if overused, they can negatively impact soil health in a variety of ways. Most of them do not discriminate between the good guys and the bad guys in terms of organisms. Everything takes a hit. As with overuse of nutrients, ecosystems may experience this as a type of disruption event, triggering secondary succession. For instance, when fungicides are used too often, the beneficial fungi are constantly knocked back, and the fields tend to become bacterial. Both of these examples result in a more simplified ecology, similar to early successional scenarios, with all of the resulting challenges for farmers. This is definitely not to say that farmers should never use pesticides. Rather, it's to point out that they should be used carefully. In most cases, this would be as a later line of defense after damage thresholds have been reached, as in the Integrated Pest Management, IPM, approach. In addition, the need for pesticides can often be precluded through the use of other management techniques, such as crop rotations and the encouragement of pest predators. Finally, where they are used. It would only make sense to ensure that their impact on soil health is minimal. How can this be managed? By making pesticides part of a broader management plan that includes a wide variety of practices based in all of the soil health principles described earlier. This will give the soil organisms the best chance to handle any chemical inputs without reducing the level of their functions. Recent research by A&L Canada Laboratories, Inc. has shown that the microbial communities in agricultural soils are in general very resilient and can handle most pesticides by breaking them down into harmless components. This is good news, but should be taken into context. There is always a cost when chemicals are applied to soil. That cost can be light and easily manageable by the soil food web, or it can be heavy as when mycorrhiza have to expend most of their energy to continuously regrow hyphal networks destroyed as collateral damage of fungicide use. Awareness by each farmer of the importance and vulnerability of life in their soil, as well as a good understanding of the potential impacts and benefits associated with each type of pesticide, would appear to be key to the wise use of crop protection products. Summary. The principles of soil health discussed in this chapter are based on the fact that soils are living ecosystems. The organisms in these living ecosystems require energy, habitat protection, and diversity. When these things are provided, these organisms create complex, productive communities which are symbiotic with and enormously beneficial to our above-ground communities. These principles are not stated in any order of importance since they are all important. They are: keep the soil covered, keep live roots in the soil as long as possible, add organic amendments such as manures and compost, maximize diversity, and minimize soil disturbance. Let's quickly review each principle in turn. Keeping the soil covered helps to provide a good, comfortable habitat for soil microbes. It regulates temperature, conserves moisture, and prevents erosion of topsoil by wind and water. The cover can consist of mulch, residues, or cover crops. Each of these will provide protection from the elements while also feeding your below-ground livestock. Keeping live roots in the soil is related to the first principle, but puts more emphasis on living cover for your soil. Living plants release high-energy exudates that can really power your microbial workforce. They also provide a refuge for mycorrhizal fungi, which require a living root in order to survive in periods between crops. These fungi, as we discussed in earlier chapters, are extremely important for almost all of the soil beneficial functions, from fertility and structure to disease suppression. Organic amendments are important because they feed the soil food web, provide good habitat for microbes, increase the soil's water holding capacity, and can even enhance the soil's diversity, which leads us to the fourth principle, maximizing diversity. This can be done through crop rotations, multi-species cover crop mixes, and above-ground refuges for indigenous plant species and wildlife. Diversity is important for many, many reasons, most of which relate to the concept of resilience, or the ability to adapt to changing conditions. This is even more important than usual, as our climate undergoes major changes. Finally, a key principle of soil health is to minimize soil disturbance. Just think how hard it would be for you to do your job if your working space and your home was periodically subjected to a wrecking ball. This practice is particularly hard on soil fungi, and they are very important for good soil structure. In addition to these principles, a focus on soil health requires that farmers pay close attention to their use of nutrients and pest control products. Although nutrients are necessary for good production, their overuse or misuse can be very hard on soil microbes. Mycorrhizal fungi, in particular, can be suppressed by overly high levels of nutrients in soils. The 4 R's program for nutrient use, right source, right rate, right time, right place, has been designed to help farmers avoid these problems. Similarly, pesticides of all kinds can hurt the good guys in the soil as much or more than they hurt the bad guys. Again, a focus on soil health requires that these products be used sparingly and carefully in order to minimize collateral damage. An integrated pest management approach known as IPM fits very nicely with the principles that we have just discussed. And in closing, we believe that the science shows clearly that a focus on soil health requires a comprehensive, systematic approach to soil management. The focus should always be on the health of the organisms in the soil and on optimizing the benefits that they offer. Farmers that have applied these principles consistently have found over time that their input needs have decreased while their yields have been maintained or enhanced. At the same time, the environmental impacts of their farms have become less, to the point where they are on the positive rather than negative side of the ledger. This is a win-win-win scenario for the farmer, the environment, and society at large. We encourage you to join the soil health movement, if you haven't already, and help take agriculture forward into a leaner, greener, and more prosperous future. This ends Chapter 7. Thanks very much for listening. This chapter, along with seven others, is part of Soils at Work, the Biology of Soil Health, an initiative of the Compost Council of Canada, Penner Waste, Overton Environmental, EnviroClean, Waste Connections, The Forks, Cities of Brandon, Portage-La Prairie, Steinbach, and Winnipeg, and the members of the Compost Quality Alliance, supported with funding through Manitoba Conservation and Climate, and Growing Forward 2, a federal-provincial territorial initiative. The Council invites you to take the self-managed quiz found at www.compost.org to help test your understanding of the information provided and become a soil builder. Remember to follow these important steps to be a soil builder. Cover the soil, keep roots in the ground, add compost and optimize other inputs, support plant and soil diversity, minimize soil disturbance. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your interest.